You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you and you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Where's the party at?
Yeah. 6:34 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. So we did manage to get through a lot in that opening segment. Almost exclusively Stanley Cup playoffs action. We looked forward to round two, looked back at round one. But we also talked about Bruce Boudreau in classic Halbro fashion. I'd say about 45 minutes after we got off the air on Friday, the Canucks announced that Bruce Boudreau would indeed be returning to be the team's head coach for next season. So we said, okay, we got something to talk about on Monday when we come in. Who better to discuss this situation? You watch him every day on Check TV. Donnie and Dolly, the team. Rick Dollywall here now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Rick? How are you?
You know, we are in the same boat as you guys. The Canucks obviously really don't care about your soul or ours. They dropped the Boudreau news. I think we had 20 minutes to go in our show, and we were scrambling as well when Boudreau announced it. So I don't think the Canucks really give a bleep's ass about you guys or us. They released it at a pretty bad time on Friday.
Yeah, and we spent the majority of the weekend kind of piecing and cobbling together things. I knew Boudreau did his media availability on Zoom, and Brough brought up a good point in the intro. He really liked the humbleness and humility that Boudreau showed, saying, yeah, there are some things that I would like to work on. I'd like to embrace analytics a little bit more, maybe a little bit more structure. And then he acknowledged that his number one priority coming in this season was right the ship, get the wins no matter how you get them. So I thought it was interesting that a guy that had that much success during the regular season was more than willing to say, yeah, that's cool. I can get better as a coach, even though I am 67 years old and have been at this for a while.
Well, let me take you back to last week, because he spent most of last week with his mom, his agent, who's Gil Scott out of Toronto, his wife. I believe the Canucks wanted an answer quick. He took his time. He took his due diligence. It was a good move by Bruce on Friday, exactly what Brough is talking about, because this was getting too public, guys. There was whispers on both sides. You know, they weren't happy. They wanted a decision quicker. National media was onto the story. The longer it went, you know, it wasn't really good for either side. In the end, I was told, I don't think Bruce had any desire to go anywhere. He told me in a phone conversation on Wednesday last week that he loves Vancouver. He loves the fans. He loves the players. And we talked about analytics in that conversation on Wednesday, and he is going to take it more seriously. And he said all the right things. And Brough is right. He said all the right things on Friday to make this thing go forward and make sure everyone's on the same page. He talked about analytics, and he talked about the new regime is really going to be big on analytics. So you know what? We got a new boss. He's big on analytics. I got to jump on board. I thought Bruce was fabulous on Friday and said all the right things.
First of all, Rick, I want to talk about how you bleeped out the wrong word when you said he doesn't give a bleep's ass. Did you just bleep out rat? Like a rat?
I was supposed to say they don't give
a rat's bleep.
Rats bleep. You know me. I'm confusing. I make a million.
It is
mistakes.
Pretty early.
Mm-hmm. It is early.
But that is
I said that as a joke at the top here, just to get
okay.
you guys.
All right. Going. Okay. Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Yeah. No. I said that bleep's ass is a joke. Yeah, just to get you guys
okay.
going.
Thanks, Rick.
No. That was
good. Good stuff. Rick, how many options do you think Bruce Boudreau had out there? Like we talked a lot about options for Bruce Boudreau. Maybe if, you know, if he was offended by what management said, or maybe he was looking for something more than going into the season in the lame duck position, which he said he's not going to feel like it, but he is going to be a lame duck coach. Did he have any other options out there? Did any other NHL teams that you heard of reach out to him as a guy that they wanted to hire?
No. And I'm going to tell you, I had a good long talk with his agent, Gil Scott, last night. Gil and I go back 20, 30 years because he used to represent all the big guys in the CFL in the 80s and 90s. You know, he represented all the big coaches like Don Matthews, Adam Reed, all those guys. Anyways, look, Gil told me, he says, I don't think Bruce had any desire to go anywhere. He wanted to go back in Vancouver. It was the right fit for him. You know what? I know everyone, this guy, it's not hard to cheer for him. You know, 35, 15, 10, he brings the passion. He put so much needed energy back in this organization and an organization Donnie calls stale. And he put so much energy and passion and heart enthusiasm into it. It was so nice. How could the owner of this team not want Bruce back? I didn't get the sense that he was looking anywhere else. In fact, I got the sense that he just took a little bit longer. Like I said, he had to talk to his mom, who is 90 years old. She lives by herself in Toronto. He runs a junior team with his wife in Hershey. When he told me that there's some details that got to be worked out, he wasn't talking about details with the Vancouver Canucks. He was talking about his own details, his family details. And, you know, his wife is back in Hershey. He's in Vancouver. There was a lot of things at play here. I never got the sense he wanted to go anywhere else. I didn't get the sense he had any opportunities elsewhere. And I think it was a good fit for him to come back in Vancouver. And it happened, and it was good that it happened on Friday, guys, because like I said, it was getting too public, and they got her done. They just got her done on Friday, and it was good.
What do you think the coaching staff is going to look like next season, Rick?
Okay, so I think that Patrick Alvin, Jim Rutherford, and Bruce Boudreau will sit down together here in the near future, and they'll talk about that. And I think that, you know, if it's high on analytics, and you know what, I don't know if there's going to be changes with the coaching staff. Look, guys, five scouts let go last week. You know, five in the medical training staff let go also last week. And the change is always going to be inevitable when you have a new regime. It just is. I'm sorry. New regime, new faces, new voices. That's expected, guys. You go and get people that you trust, that you know. Could there be more from the Penguins organization coming to Vancouver? You certainly hear that. You do. You know, people hear that all the time. And look at the Penguins are going through a transition themselves. They got new owners. And there may be people on the Pittsburgh side that are not retained because of the new ownership. So, look, these guys have gone to Pittsburgh a lot since they came, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin. And some people think they'll continue to do that. I think they're going to take their time on the coaches and sit down with Bruce and figure it out. Would you be surprised if there's changes on the coaching side? I don't think there'll be a ton, but maybe if there is, maybe one or two.
It's hard not to look at what happened in Pittsburgh during their era there and say that they always had a coach in waiting, right? So when Therrien got dismissed, Bylsma got brought up from the American League. When Johnson got dismissed, Sullivan was already there and ready to go. Now, the big difference there, of course, is those were AHL guys that got moved up. And by all accounts, it's Trent Cole who's going to be the head coach in Abbotsford next year.
Yeah.
Do we take anything from this time in Pittsburgh? Because, I mean, I can't say it's unique to Alvin and to Rutherford. Every organization probably wants to have a coach in waiting. It just makes sense. But I do know that in Pittsburgh, they talked a lot about the streamline between the American League and the NHL team, always having the next coach that's kind of understands the system and is familiar with it. I do wonder if we need to take that into account when the Canucks are having their coaching staff filled out now.
That's right. And when Travis Green was let go, the Canucks did not go to Abbotsford. And, you know, that was a classic point right there. Usually you like to have somebody in your farm team that you have enough confidence to bring up if there's a coaching change at midseason to get you through the year, even if the guy's not there, your long-term fix. Is he good? Can he get you through the year? Stuff like that. As far as I know, when I talked to Jim Rutherford 2 weeks ago, he was raving about Trent Call. He said he gets these players ready for the NHL level. He was talking about Lockwood and others that have, you know, Sheldon Dries came up, you know, Patan came up. All these, they thought he did a great job getting them ready for Vancouver. Trent Call's biggest supporter and has been his biggest supporter in Vancouver since the day he was signed is Ryan Johnson. They go back to Utica together. Ryan just loves the job that Trent Call does. I think Trent will be back for sure. But you know what? Bruce is back. He's there for next year. And don't forget, the thing that Bruce said that was interesting in the his news conference, there will be no contract talks during the season. They will, after the season, they will sit down and decide whether or not they're going to extend him. I thought that was great. And I thought there's nothing worse, especially the other thing that guys that both Rutherford and Boudreaux, and I think Boudreaux's agent as well, realized is that when something like this plays public in a Canadian market, it's a whole lot different than Carolina or Columbus, or, you know, people are taking sides. Oh, hey, the Canucks, you know, they have the right to talk about zone exits. Hey, why are you doing that to Bruce? He was 35, 15, and 10. This played out in a much different fashion in the Canadian market than it would have elsewhere in smaller markets in the U.S. So I think everybody got a bit of a lesson here about how a big story can develop in a Canadian market as opposed. Look, if Jim Rutherford went through this in Carolina, it wouldn't have got the attention, the national media attention that it did, like it did in Vancouver. So, guys, I think everybody learned a lot here in the last 2 weeks. I think it's a perfect situation. Bruce is back. You have to give him credit for his record of 13, 15, and 10. And as Bruff said, you know what? He came out and he said, I got to get better in analytics. I'm going to improve. The Canucks have a big analytics department. They have invested in there. It surely looks like to me, Alvina Rutherford, they love the analytics part of it. And that hasn't been a big thing in Vancouver, but I think it is going to be going forward.
So, Rick, I guess the next big thing for the Canucks to do is to figure out the situation with Brock Besser. Because if they can get him signed to a 2 or 3 year deal, good. As long as the cap hit is manageable, I don't know, somewhere around $6 million or something along those lines. I'm not going to go through the numbers now. Because if they can't get a deal with Brock Besser, then what do they go from there? Like, they could do the 1 year qualifying offer thing, but that doesn't sound ideal. Agree?
No, it doesn't. But also, it's a safety net. It's a safety net. I'll tell you this about Brock Besser. Thomas Strantz and I, we dropped the article Friday. We expect contract talks to pick up this week with Brock's agent, Ben Hankinson. The two sides, like you said, are going to try and get term done. They in a perfect world, they can get a 2 to 3 year done for 2 to 3 year deal done. There is work to do. Listen, guys, I'm not hearing anything as close. There's work to do here, but they got a few weeks to get it done. Both sides. The key for me, guys, is both sides want to get it done. You remember the trading deadline and every national guy was saying Besser's gone, Besser's gone, Besser's gone. Well, I'll tell you something about Brock Besser. Management likes this guy. You know, it is really tricky trading goal scorers, especially guys that you drafted, because then you got to go out and get goal scorers via trade or on July 1st. The last guy they went to July 1st to get goals, in fact, the last two guys were both flops, Louis Erickson and Sam Gagner. You know, they went to get offense on July 1st, and Brian Burke always says, never build your team on July 1st. The Canucks were trying to build it on July 1st, and they got busted. Bottom line here is Brock Besser's got a contract for next year if, capital letters, if the Canucks pick up a $7.5 million qualifying offer. But I can tell you that the want and the desire from both sides is to get Brock done. They value him as a player. He's obviously a good person on and off the ice. He's got good character, the whole nine yards. They're going to try and get it done, guys. The sweet spot could be a 2 to 3 year deal. Time will tell, but they got a few weeks here to keep working at it and try to get it done.
And Brock wants to be a Canuck?
Oh, I haven't heard otherwise. His agent came on our show 2 weeks ago and exactly said that. Mm-hmm. The goal is to sign with the Vancouver Canucks. And I have, you know, Brock's an interesting case. His name always pops up. A lot of it is, you know, Canucks Twitter or it's the media induced. But I have never heard once that this guy wants out of Vancouver. I really haven't. I've had a good relationship with his agent, Ben Hankinson. Last time they did a 3 year deal, I just never get the sense that he wants out. Look, he's in a Canadian market. And even Ben said, if you're supposed to score goals in the NHL and you don't score at the clip you're supposed to be scoring, well, guess what? There's criticism, and especially in a Canadian market. So a lot of times you do see the criticism, you know, more goals, but I have never heard, as far as I know, that he wants out. But and the fact that they're talking right now and they want to get a deal done with term, that's a big thing for me. Both sides want term. The Canucks could easily say, you know what, one more year, come back and show us you can score 30, 35, and we'll give you a real nice raise. they're basically saying, hey, we like you, we want you back, and we're talking term.
Andre Kuzmenko, what are the Canucks' chances of landing this guy? How good is he, and what would a potential salary cap hit be for Kuzmenko?
Chance is very good. He's made the short list. The interview went well with the Canucks. Kuzmenko can only sign a one-year deal at an entry level, so $925. But here's the kicker. The agent isn't looking for teams that will take him for next year. They're looking with one eye on the future. They want a deal where teams who have cap room for years two and three as well. Okay, Canucks like his skill, his power play ability. Agent and Patrick Alvin have a very good relationship. Alvin's watching this player long term. My Russian sources say he will be a player that can play in the NHL. Everything is pointing towards, there's a reason 25 teams called his agent, guys. Well, he is a good player. The other reason 25 teams are called, guys, is very simple. This is a freebie. This is a freebie. And this doesn't cost you a draft pick. It doesn't cost you anything. Draft picks or a player, it doesn't cost you anything. It's a freebie. And you look at the Canucks are going to announce Linus Karlsson signing when he's done at the World Hockey Championships for Sweden. And you look at Arsdeep Baines. Look, these are freebies. These are guys that you went out and got. Between if they land Kuzmenko, Baines, and Karlsson, all of a sudden you got a little bit, well, especially with Karlsson and Baines, your depth for scoring in the Abbotsford, you prop that up a bit. But Kuzmenko is 100% in the mix. Thomas and I are really hearing some good things about Vancouver and Kuzmenko. I think the Canucks will be, I'm not saying the Canucks are going to land him, but I think they'll be right there at the end.
Rick, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for doing this morning. We really appreciate it. Have a good show today. We'll do this again soon.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. That's Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly. Check the team here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So the Canucks have wrapped up their amateur scouting meetings. They've wrapped up their pro scouting meetings. The next big thing on their list now that they sent out is just the entry draft. And that's July 7th to 8th. Now, that's just what they sent out. They also have to figure out the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And I imagine they want to make those decisions pretty soon, because if they let go of any guys, they want to give those guys a chance to go get jobs with other NHL teams. It's kind of the same thing with scouts, right? Like, if you're going to relieve some guys from their jobs, then you want to give them a fair chance to find a new job. So I imagine they'll want to fill that out as soon as possible. The Brock Besser negotiation is something that needs to get done as soon as possible as well, just because you need to know where you are right now. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's a bunch of options with Brock Besser. There's the come to an agreement on a 2 or 3 year deal. There's the 1 year qualifying offer, which he could, in theory, just accept and kick the can down the road for another year. Or the Canucks could try and find a market for him. And this is a team that wants to get better. Mm-hmm. This is still a team that probably wants to clear some cap space. How they're going to do that, how badly they need to do that, will in large part be determined if Brock Besser's on the roster next season.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing now is we try and parse what management has done and what they'll do moving forward. I will say this. We're still trying to come to, not grips, but we're still trying to get a read on how things are going to play out, what execution is going to look like, how plans are going to be turned into results. I'll say this. In two particular instances now, the management group, and by that I just mean Alvin and Rutherford, so the management group has been real direct and real straightforward prior to an event happening. And then when the event happens, you're like, that basically was mapped out exactly as they laid it out. So the Mott thing at the deadline I thought was very telling, even though it was a very minuscule deal. They just were straight up. They're like, we're not going to let an unrestricted free agent walk, no matter how valuable he is to the team. And what did they do? They flipped him to New York. They got a fourth-round pick in return. Mott actually came back on the weekend, by the way, for those that missed it. The Boudreaux thing, as I was trying to work my way through Rutherford's comments and then Boudreaux's response, was maybe this is all straight shooting from both parties. Rutherford went up at his end-of-year media address and said, I like Bruce. I think he's a good coach. But here are the things he needs to work on. And then Boudreaux said, you know what? The president of Hockey Ops was right. There are some things that I could learn and get better with. Just, and he's, if Rutherford's going to be a straight shooter and just put information out there without any spin or, you know, nibbling around some gray areas of it, I think it's a really interesting sign. So what does this mean for Besser? If both parties are saying that they're going to work to get something done, I got a feeling that they'll probably work to get something done.
Isn't that the key in all these situations? Like, if both sides want to get something done, it normally ends up getting done, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's a good point. Sometimes it's not as complicated or as difficult as some folks make it out to be.
Right.
Sometimes it's, well, my client likes it here and doesn't want to move his stuff. And the team says, well, we have this amount of money available for your client. And
right.
Shake hands and then, mm-hmm. I mean, Rick's got a pretty good handle on it. Getting Besser back on a 2 to 3 year deal with not a gigantic cap hit probably makes the best sense for everyone. It's not perfect, but I don't know if you're ever going to get a perfect negotiation.
I think what it does, at the very least, is it creates some valuable value for the club on the contract. Right now, it's hard to value that contract because you have that qualifying offer hanging over everything. You have this uncertain future, and it's also a little rich. Like, paying Brock Besser over $7 million is a little rich.
Sure.
If you can get it down on a 2 or 3 year deal to $6 million, it just seems a little better in terms of value for the Canucks.
And it's especially rich for a team that has a management group that openly acknowledged there are cap challenges. Right? It's not like they've been really fiscally prudent and frugal to where maybe you can overspend a little bit. The Canucks are in a cap crunch.
Yeah.
Every dollar counts. We'll see what happens. We got a lot more to get to on this program. 7 o'clock hour, we're going to go back to Toronto. Those poor, poor Maple Leafs fans. As we revel in their disappointment, we're going to bring on the guy that does our gig in Toronto, J.D. Bunkus, Fan 590. I listened to them this morning. It was a very, very energetic, emotional, and I would say at times confusing show because a lot of the questions were, well, what do we do now? And the answers were plenty, and none of them all that great. We'll talk to J.D. about experiencing Saturday and then what comes next for this tortured fan base in Toronto. That's all coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You're going to want to hear it. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Brough.
I do think this could be Dubas's, for lack of a better phrase, Blake, his summer of Kawhi or summer of DeRozan. I do think he will try to do something big, potentially.
7:03 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. J.D. Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto is going to join us in a moment to kick off hour two. This hour of Halford and Brough is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. I listened to him this morning on my drive in just to get a sense of what Toronto is feeling right now. It is J.D. Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, J.D.? How are you?
I am poor.
Yes.
But I will, you know what though? I am a gracious loser. And so I would like to congratulate the city of Vancouver on their Stanley Cup, the closest thing they will ever get to it, the loss of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Congratulations. It's your Super Bowl. I know what it means to all of you. And I just want to say that it's awesome to see you guys all so happy this morning. I'm sure it's raining there. It's like dark, cloudy, whatever, windy, but you have your Stanley Cup, and that is the Toronto Maple Leafs losing.
JD, I don't want to rain on your parade, but things might be worse than you think they are because I actually felt sorry for Leafs fans.
I know.
This
I know.
One.
That's
like,
the worst.
I went from being like, last year I was laughing hard when the Leafs blew it to the Montreal Canadiens, but this year, for some reason, I don't know if it was like they tried so hard or the games were really entertaining and I felt like appreciative that the games entertained me, or that I felt sorry. Like, there was still part of me that was like, that's pretty funny. Yeah, yeah, but yeah. Like, but I also, yeah. But like, was this the worst one? Was this the worst one of all the losses? Was this the worst one?
No, the worst one was the Montreal one, because it's not really a rivalry, because they never played each other. And then, like, Toronto, this is why you guys didn't feel as bad, is Toronto was humbled a little bit. The entire city, the fan base, whatever. Like, I know that we're insufferable. There's the most of us. It's where the most of the media hubs are. And so you end up getting way too much information on Leafs players. And if you care about other hockey, like, I'm from out west. I know how this operates. Like, it is what it is. Like, there's some painful truth to it. Like, if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, the amount of coverage you get through your team nationally compared to the Leafs, even when you're good and they stink, is insufferably different. It's hard to watch it. And then it's even worse when you're on social media and, like, there's a 10 billion Toronto Maple Leafs fan accounts that all have, like, some combination of Matthews, Marner, Nylander in their mentions, who, like, act as though this franchise has won something with this, like, real, just annoying level of defiance about their lack of success. I get it. It sucks. And last year during the North Division, Toronto thumped everybody. Like, if you guys recall, there was one series against Edmonton where it was, hey, these are the two best teams, and let's see how they face up against one of them. And Toronto thumped them, like, shut down McDavid. Draisaitl had some, like, crybaby quotes at the podium, and people in the city thought, like, holy crap, the North Division is kind of cheap, but here's Toronto finally gets to be the bully in Canada, right? Like, you finally have it where the cocky, arrogant, quote-unquote, supposed to be the Yankees of, I don't know, the hockey world, are actually good, and everybody has to be fearful of them making a deep run. And they get embarrassed by a team that picked first overall this year. Like, they're up 3-1 to a quote-unquote rival, and they get stumped, and they get stoned, and they can't overcome, like, the smallest little adversity, and they lose. Now you just have Habs fans forever, right, that just get to have that. Like, that's just a thing. That's a real thing. And in Canada, you guys know this, like, none of us win. All of us are losers. We're all just different levels of losers. And so we just have to debate with one another, like, who did the worst losing the latest? Like, that's what this is. So that one sucked. This one was a little different in the sense of, you could really tell the stars showed up. And this was kind of like the whole formula. So this is why this one stung, is that you go, wow, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, and Tavares come the end of it. They're clicking, and Morgan Riley's going, and they're getting some goaltending where it's not backbreaking for once in their lives, and they still couldn't do it. And you end up in the end of that series, and now you have, like, micro-analysis of every little thing, and also, this will probably bring you more joy than anything, the fan base is at each other's throats. Mm. Normally, this is the only time where Leafs fans all come together and go, we're pissed off, we're sour, we want changes, we want blood. And all of us get to bandy together in our misery. But now the worst has happened, which is that they lost in a way that's confusing. So people all have different opinions, yeah. And they're all just tearing each other's eyes out. We're in a dirty pit right now, just clawing with each other, fighting, slapping out here. Because anybody who has a thought is a wrong idiot. There's people who want to bring it back. There's people who are so down bad in this city from losing that we're starting to go, like, well, we lost better this time, so that's pretty good. It's a nightmare. So, yeah, it's horrible. It's a hell. I think I might actually be in hell. It's bad. Sorry, that was a long rant, but, yeah, it's bad. It's really bad.
One, I saw the fight video as well. Yeah, the fans have definitely begun to eat one another, which is always a great thing to see.
Can we get some guys in the city who know how to throw a punch? That was the biggest embarrassment of this all. That... how do you grow up to be in your early 20s at least and not know how to, like, throw one punch?
Is that wall still standing? Because that wall took quite a haymaker.
This morning, I alluded to this earlier. This morning I was driving in, appointment listening to hear you guys, because I wanted to get a sense of where the fan base was at, obviously, because you actually quite succinctly put it together there. It is a wide range of emotions and a lot of people feeling and saying a lot of different things. After any significant loss like this, the question always becomes, what do we do now? What happens next? Yeah. It's inevitable. And, you know, we played the clip from Friedge that was on your show earlier, and he coined the phrase, maybe Dubas has his, quote, summer of Kawhi, which, for those that don't understand what that reference is, basically you go out and you make that big, bold move designed to take a good team over the top to make it great. My only pushback to that would be that they have the Hart Trophy winner, possibly, a 60-goal scorer, a superstar. It's not like they need to go out and acquire a superstar. I understand the sentiment that Friedge had. I'm just curious, sir, when you heard that, do you agree or disagree with the sentiment?
So here's where I'm at with it is I think smart organizations have just about everything always on the table. I think it's really kind of stupid or you're not doing your job if you're not at least open to the idea of taking a big swing or shuffling the deck chairs a little bit more than they have in years past. I understand anybody that looks at this Leafs team and says, oh man, they're right there. Like, you've just got to run it back, because if it's any other team than Tampa and whatever, there's two things I have though. One is, I don't think that this Tampa team was the Tampa of last two seasons. Like, they just weren't. And it's like, all right, people are telling this almost like they just, I think it's getting counted a little differently, but anyways, they've had 10 chances to eliminate a team since 2018. 10 chances, 10 games, and they've lost them all. They had 4 games in a row against the Tampa Bay Lightning where they conceded the first goal of the game and were working themselves out of a pit the entire time. I don't think that these guys have earned the right, just because they lost in a game 7, to say that nobody is getting moved off this roster and it's going to be a total run back. If I'm Kyle Dubas and I get to keep this job, which it appears he is going to keep the job, I look at it and say, we are close, but we need more depth down the lineup in terms of the forwards. Like, this is another year where just it felt like there's two lines of no force and no impact for on the scoring. And so if a guy like Nylander, and he's the only guy because he can't move Tavares, and you're clearly not moving the other two guys because they're, like, unbelievable, you know, like they're once-in-a-lifetime players for your franchise in Marner and Matthews. But if someone comes to you with a Godfather deal for Nylander because they feel like, man, that guy actually is a superstar and we can give you two good players, like two really quality players for a higher ceiling guy, I think you at least have to entertain it. I'm not saying you make a trade for the sake of making a trade, but, like, if you're keeping Dubas, then he's probably going to keep his coach in Sheldon Keefe. That's, like, his guy who he's been paired with since the Marley. Okay, so those two are staying. You're keeping the stars. What are you doing? You're moving around, like, depth pieces on the fourth line? Well, you're the Leafs. You got no cap. So if you're changing anything, you're going from $1.2 million forward to the next. They got nobody coming up in the farm. Nobody. They got the two defensemen that are young that are down their lineup that they have. And then this kid decided to go back to college. That was the only hope that they actually had in terms of a younger player having been coming back and giving them some impact. So there's just not a lot of options. And so you kind of look at it, and I get what Elliot's saying in the sense of, if you decide to run it back, then you're saying we're essentially running it back the exact same way. And so to me, you at least have to, after 10 chances to close a team out and not doing it, you have to at least entertain the prospect of, well, there's opportunity cost every year that you continue to lose, but there's got to be an element of this between their ears. And eventually, when you're down and you're losing games, you can't look around the room and see all the same faces. Like, something has to be different for me. And so that's what I think the Kawhi thing is that if something comes across, which is what happened with the Raptors, where you get a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make a huge, splashy trade that ripple affects things but also has a real chance of changing, like, your foundation, you have to at least look at it.
Yeah, because I wonder what the psychological hangover will be from this series, because – you know, and I know the Leafs have a hangover every year, but eventually it gets to the point where the group goes, like, I don't know, is the sacrifice worth it just to have this feeling of disappointment in the end? And then you get guys playing distracted and it all sort of falls apart. I get what you're saying about changing the actual DNA of the team, because we've heard so much in Toronto about, like, the veterans that they bring in for the bottom six, whether it's Joe Thornton or Jason Spezza or Wayne Simmons, or, you know, the deadline pickups that they've brought in the past.
Foligno.
But it doesn't, really change the overall structure of the team. You're talking about, like, bringing in another star player. Would they consider bringing in one on defense or maybe even in goal?
So I think the blue line is a very interesting part of the team, because they have a lot of guys, and there's a widespread belief that Giordano, who's from here, is going to become the new Spezza, in that he'll be the veteran who gives you some surplus value by taking the veteran minimum or something close to it. So assuming Giordano is back, that means you've got eight defensemen who are going to be under contract. They've clearly got to make some room for Liljegren and Sandin, at least one of those two guys. They just gave Morgan Rielly a contract extension. That leaves a real question of, like, do you move one of your other defensemen? Brody and Muzzin were just so important for them in this last series. I don't know how you move either of those guys. The big one is Muzzin, where if he carries weight around the league right now, if someone really covets him, I think if you're Toronto, you have to explore the possibility of trading him. He makes like $5.5 million. He's 33 years old. I don't think that they have the luxury of letting him get old on their team. So you're going to have to look at Muzzin. You're going to have to at least circle the names. Hall is basically as good as gone. So that's at least one of the guys. But yeah, there's going to be some interesting ones there. Campbell is the tricky one because, yeah, if you listen to that Elliott report, the Leafs lowballed them in the middle of the season. And he kind of acquitted himself pretty well. He made the All-Star team. He slowed down after that. But come down the stretch, guy played really, really good hockey. And he battled in a lot of those games. Like, that's the other part of this is that, man, he kept them in those games where they fell down 2-0. And if not for him, the series is probably a lot over or earlier over. I've done 4 hours talking today. It's over earlier. And I think that he's got some leverage with that team. I just don't see those being the moves. I still think it's up front. Like, when we're talking core DNA, the core DNA has always been it's these four guys. It's the we can and we will guys. And to me, that's always going to be the thing is, can you have four forwards that occupy that much cap space? Four guys who didn't leave anything on the table leave so little for the rest of your forward group. I would just think that that's still the area where if they're going to shake things up, that's the meaningful one. That's the one where there's actually real conversation about what that does to change your team.
Is JT Miller a name that gets bandied about in Toronto?
I mean, yeah, he's – I love JT Miller. I'm a massive fan of his, and when he got rumored towards Toronto this past offseason, I think we talked about this, like, what would it take? Let's make the fake trade. If you can get the JT Miller trade done, if you can figure out a way around that, I would say that that's exactly the type of player that Toronto needs. Like, they just need a guy who can score a big goal, who is not afraid to go to a dirty area, who's a veteran and who's respected around the league, and, yeah, just does – like, he just I love guys who make winning plays, and that's what he is. He's just a winning plays guy. I never really see him, and you guys would know better than me because you watch every game, but I've always gotten the impression whenever I have watched him that he's just the same regardless of really what the game script is, that he's just able to maintain that consistency, and I think that's what you want if you're the Leafs. So I don't know what the price would be on him as a pending free agent. I'm sure Vancouver's going to shop him. The problem with guys like that is that what team doesn't want JT Miller? Like, what team around hockey wouldn't want to try to make that work? And so his market would be massive. And Toronto is, like I said it earlier, like, they're in a spot where they don't have a lot of prospects that are coming up. They don't have a lot of that capital. They've given up a lot of first-round picks. They've been chasing this sucker for a couple of years. And so, you know, are you going to overpay in terms of people that are young, cheap contracts that you have? Like, it's tough. I really think the only way that you inject yourself in that conversation is with Nylander, and then it's like, what is Vancouver giving back? Because that's a guy who's under control and who, frankly, just still has more upside at this point of his career. But, like, that's the kind of big-time shaker move that I am talking about. So, yeah, absolutely interested. Just don't see how it ends up working out.
Sheldon Keefe's line about the Leafs getting a lot more respect in the handshake lineup. Got a dry, wry smile from Bruff and I this morning. But on the subject of the head coach, I know you like to wager. If you had to place down some cash right now and put a bet on whether Sheldon Keefe will be back as the head coach of the Leafs or not, where would you be betting?
I would say that it's got to be like minus 200 that he returns.
Okay.
Like, not a monumental favorite, but like...
Sure.
Yeah. Basically the Flames last night against the Stars, where you go, like, I can see the path. I can see the path to the Stars winning, but ultimately you got to favor the Flames. They're the more talented team, blah, 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 blah. I just think, again, he's Dubas's guy. And so am I really going to believe that Dubas puts this all and lays it at Sheldon Keefe's feet? It's hard to envision that stuff. You guys know this. Like,
I would put it on Halford. I would 100% be like, it was Halford's fault. We're going to make a change.
Well,
if our ratings were down, we're like...
All of
Yeah, Halford gets the axe.
And then I would reply with, but we have so much more respect.
Yeah. You should have seen the respect we were getting. It was just a massive. Everybody's talking about the respect. Yeah, hockey's a relationship sport to a frustrating degree. It's like everybody is in the boy. Like, the boys club is a real thing in hockey.
Yep.
And I don't think Dubas and Keith are in that boys club. I think they're their own club on the outside. And so I think that for him to fracture one of his only relationships that frankly runs like deep in this game for either of them, and to like, what happens to Sheldon Keith? He probably gets another job on a bench, but does he get a head coaching gig again? Like, how long does that take? I don't know. I have a hard time seeing it actually happen. But I would say that if I was MLSC or the powers that be that are going to decide on Kyle Dubas's job, I would at least have to know that he'd be willing to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I need to know that if he thinks that it's a problem, that he has to be honest about it in his assessment. Because, like, we've seen this before. Like, remember when, oh, for me anyway, Brian Burke brought in Ron Wilson. And it was like, that was his best buddy. He loved Ron Wilson. He and Ron Wilson, two peas in a pod. Brian Burke fired Ron Wilson.
Yeah.
He's like, see ya. Hey, buddy. Went to college together, whatever. Like, you're running USA Hockey. Doesn't matter. You're out of here. Will Kyle Dubas have the ability to do that? I think it still remains to be seen. So I'll give it minus 200.
Okay. First, I want to thank you for doing this today, man. I know that it's been a really long morning. You've been talking for hours, and I appreciate you hanging around to do this a little bit longer with us.
I love you guys' show.
Yeah, well,
you guys have my respect. You have my respect, truly, in the handshake line.
In the handshake line.
I appreciate that. I also respect what you guys did this morning, because it was a tough one, but the show was great. It always is. Thanks again for doing this, JD. Go get some rest. We'll do this again soon.
Absolutely. See you, fellas.
See you later. That's JD Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Let's play that Friedman audio on with JD Bunkus this morning on Fan 590 in Toronto, just in case you missed it. We'll play a couple clips. The first one is about Kyle Dubas and whether or not this is his summer of Kawhi.
I do think this could be Dubas's, for lack of a better phrase, Blake, his summer of Kawhi or summer of DeRozan. I do think he will try to do something big, potentially. You know, I we'll see what he says when they have their availabilities, but they, you know, they last year they put belief in their group, and, you know, again, even though I thought they were better, it still didn't happen, and I think he will. I don't necessarily think he's going to do something that enormous, but I think he will consider it.
So could JT Miller be part of that, is what a lot of Canucks fans are wondering, simply because the name has come up. I personally don't know if there's a match there, if there's a trade with Toronto that makes sense for what the Canucks want going forward, but this is what Friedge had to say.
I thought, like, I think that is the kind of player that they, you know, I think he is the kind of player they could really use. Like, I think they called the Canucks about Miller. I think there was some interest, but I don't think it really went that far. I just don't think it was a deal that was likely to be made at the time. I'm not even sure how likely it would be now, to be honest, but I do think that's the kind of player they should be looking for.
So the one team that I actually have an eye on right now in terms of if the Canucks trade JT Miller is Boston, because I don't know if you guys watched the Bruins get eliminated by the Canes over the weekend, but Patrice Bergeron sure looked like a player that wasn't coming back.
Sure looked like he was saying his farewells.
Yeah, he waited by the gate off the ice and basically shook hands and hugged every teammate coming off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I know he's the captain, but that doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, and I
wonder if he had told his teammates, I wonder if his teammates knew that whole series that this was going to be it for Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah, if you followed any Boston media over the last 48 hours, that was the number one storyline coming off the ice, which is kind of remarkable considering there was a lot going on in that series, including a pretty entertaining Game 7. One that I don't think necessarily signals the end of an era in Boston, but when Patrice Bergeron leaves, and if he does leave, it is some kind of an end of an era because of how long he's been there, how good he's been since he's been there, and then how do you replace him? Can you replace him? There's a lot there. The Miller thing for Toronto, I think it's more, Friedge probably hit the nail on the head where he said that type of move, that type of player as opposed to that particular player.
Yeah.
I don't think, I honestly, if I was to put money on it right now, the most likely outcome, and I know this might sound crazy in the aftermath because the loss was so painful, I think the Leafs run it back.
Here's how I think things went this season in Toronto. And this is actually, like, I do have some information on this.
Okay.
That they went into this season with basically saying that if we don't get past the first round or if we have another playoff failure again, one of the core four is going. Nylander or Marner being the most likely, mm-hmm. probably Nylander. Here's the thing, though. I wonder if how they lost to Tampa Bay changes that.
Sure.
They played in that changes that. I think it's really easy to go into it and be like, if we don't get it done this year, for sure we're having a big shakeup and one of these guys is gone.
Yeah.
But then you play the series and you're like, we're actually pretty happy with the team. Like the one thing they don't want to do is bleed value just for the sake of making a trade, just for the sake of saying, like, well, we said that we'd shake this thing up if they didn't get past the first round, so that's what we have to do now.
It is a bit naive to think that trading William Nylander was going to make the difference in a series that, quite honestly, was a coin toss. Game 7, one goal. It was even.
Well, they could have put him away in Game 6, too.
Right.
But they didn't. That's the thing. And JD brings up a good point. Like, they did surrender the first goal in a lot of games. They did have bad starts in a lot of games. They mm-hmm. put themselves behind that. They played a lot like the Canucks. You know, they put themselves behind the eight ball in a lot of games and were forced to come back. And the fact that they did come back was admirable, but it wasn't great that they were trailing in the first place. Very complicated situation
yep.
in Toronto. We'll have to see first if Kyle Dubas is going to be back and then if Sheldon Keefe is going to be back, then what they're going to do with Jack Campbell. Oh, lots of decisions in Toronto, lots of decisions in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And we will have some time to discuss Bruce Boudreau coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show. At 8 o'clock, we're going to talk to Mark Spector about the looming Battle of Alberta, which I think we're all very excited for. Mm-hmm. If you're a Canucks fan out there, who are you cheering for? Calgary or Edmonton? I have not made up my mind, and I'm hoping to go in the series cheering for nobody. But I put this question out on Twitter, and people were like, you have to make a decision. I'm like, well, I don't have to make
don't
a decision.
To.
But I wonder if one will emerge. Here's the thing, and I'll rehash this. The players, like if you're talking about just like players that I like, mm-hmm. Calgary.
Okay.
Because write I like Tanev. I like Markstrom.
Jason Brough likes the Calgary Flames.
I like Toffoli.
Write it down.
But I hate the Flames, like as a team. And for me, the logo always trumps the players. But the Oilers, so the alternative is the Oilers, right? And I like McDavid. I love watching him play.
Yep.
I think he's so exciting. Like I like watching McDavid. I like watching Cale Makar. I don't like some other players on the Oilers.
I feel like you're just trying to work this to make it okay to root for the Flames.
No, I'm not.
Are you just working it out real time and you don't think you're going to come to a conclusion?
I honestly think like every time I say, I think like, well, I guess I'll cheer for the Flames. My brain goes, no, you're not cheering for the Flames. Never. You will never, ever cheer for the Flames.
Okay, so on the subject of the Battle of Alberta, one of these two teams will be in the Western Conference Finals. This guarantees this all-Canadian matchup, this battle of Alberta means that at least one team will be going to the conference final. On that note, PlayNow.com has all the outright winners, Eastern and Western Conference, in their futures category. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. So no surprise, the President's Trophy winning Florida Panthers right now are the odds-on favorite to advance and win the Eastern Conference and represent the East in the Stanley Cup. They're at 255. Also not surprisingly, Colorado is the sportsbook favorite in the Western Conference to advance and go to the Stanley Cup Final. The Flames come in second at 355. The Oilers third at 675. So if you want to take a look at those and see, maybe you want to put some cash down on some futures, go check them out now. It is at playnow.com. We have an open segment, as Jason mentioned, coming up next. Get your What We Learns in. Hashtag them WWL. What did you learn over the last 72 hours in sports? We have not mentioned a completely bizarre Sunday of Game 7s in the National Basketball Association. I don't think you will ever see what you saw between the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks ever again. It was garbage time at the start of the third quarter in a game seven to go to a conference final. It was bizarre.
Wasn't it the same way in the Bucks-Celtics?
A little closer.
A little, but not really.
Well, let's put it this way. In the
Bucks-Celtics a little closer,
game,
but it was still a blowout where the defending champs kind of went, ah, we're done.
In the Celtics-Bucks game, there was not a single player that matched the scoring total from the other team, and that's what happened in the first half. Luka Doncic had 27 points in the first half. The Phoenix Suns had 27 points in the first half. Anyway, if you want to get any of this stuff in, hashtag at WWL, what you learned over the last 72 hours in sports, let us know. It's your chance to be on the radio. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.